I've been the champion since 1978. I never lost the championship. Tonight, I just regained the belt.
And I'd like to announce, unfortunately, that Randy Savage has been unable to sign a contract with the World Wrestling Federation.
The bell rings and Diesel, the seven-foot monster, seizes the opportunity. What a boot to the midsection. And then from there, Bob Backlund, jackknife to the canvas. Diesel, the cover. And in a record-setting 8 seconds, Diesel becomes the new World Wrestling Federation champion.
Hello, my name is Bob Bamber and welcome to the Wrestling 20 Years Ago podcast. We're going back in the time machine to November of 1994 for volume one of 3-volume show this month. We've got so much to talk about. Volume one we're actually recording last, but I can tell you about what you will come to. Volume two is our ECW and Triple A When Worlds Collide pay-per-view review part of the show. Myself and Dell look back at all the, it's usual ECW TV reviews, some great stuff in there, the Sandman Dreamer angle. Brilliant. And then the second half of that show is a first, which is, I'm not even on it. Dell and Chris Lacey review the AAA When Worlds Collide Lucha Libre pay-per-view, produced in association, with WCW. And then in volume three, myself, Kieran Mitchell and Chris White review all the WCW action of the month. Lots to discuss there, including, a new story that we'll come to in a sec here on this part of the show. But part of the reason we split into three parts is because we've got so much WWF action to discuss. I'd like to introduce, firstly, Del Muir.
Hi, Bob.
And Chris Bradish. Chris?
Hi, Bob.
Del, starts with the news.
Yeah, first things first, Bob, WWF this month, quite a big departure. Randy Savage has departed the Federation after failing to come to an agreement over a new contract. It would seem he's WCW bound already. Vince McMahon announced that both sides couldn't come to an agreement on an episode of Raw earlier in the month, wishing them all the best in quite a heartfelt interview segment the following week. Savage's departure came as a bit of a shock to many within the company. He was on the cover of this month's WWF magazine, and he was actually quoted inside saying that he didn't care if someone gave him $40 million. The big leagues was with the WWF, but as we say, he is expected to debut with WCW as early as next month.
Yep, the WWF title changed hands twice in November, which sees Diesel as the new champion. The first change, an expected one in some parts, saw Bob Backlund defeat Bret Hart at Survivor Series, after Bret's mother Helen threw in the towel after Bret had been in the cross-faced chicken wing for 9 minutes. The second, more surprising given the time rather than the name, was Diesel defeating Bob Backlund at a house show at Madison Square Garden in a match that lasted 10 seconds.
And back to the Bret and Bob Backlund match again. It was another title match for Bret that didn't close the event. The match actually, the pay-per-view ended with Undertaker and Yokozuna in a casket match, and it saw interference from the Million Dollar Stable. We can only assume at this point, but it does look as if it's setting up a programme with Undertaker and presumably King Kong Bundy. Diesel did have his night on the show as well. The star in the opener has eliminated 3 members of the Bad Guys in quick succession, under 90 seconds. It then saw a bizarre finish that saw all 5 members of the Teamsters counted out at the same time, leaving Razor as the last man standing. And in the rest of the show, the Million Dollar Team defeated Guts and Glory. And in the comedy spot of the evening, all 4 members of Jerry Lawler's royal family survived against Clowns R Us.
Yokozuna is expected to be taking some time off after his defeat against The Undertaker for some minor surgery, and is expected to be out until after WrestleMania. As we will discuss in the Volume 3 of this month's show, it is believed that WCW are interested in signing Yokozuna, so Hulk Hogan can possibly get his win back over him from the King of the Ring last year. Also, Bret Hart will be off TV until January. In storyline, at least, he will be selling the effects of the cross-faced chicken wing. In reality, he's shooting an episode of Lonesome Dove.
And last bit of WWF news for the month, Bill Nakan owned defeated Alundra Blaze to capture the WWF Women's title. It's in front of over 40,000 fans in the Tokyo Dome this month at an All Japan Women's show. The match itself was said to be a bit of a disappointment. People had seen the previous matches in WWF TV were said to have thought they were better, but footage did air the Switch on Survivor Series, along with an incredibly awkward interview segment with Todd Pettingill and Bill Nakano. Bill obviously just speaking in Japanese.
We end the news this month with the tragic news of the death of Art Barr. On November the 23rd, 1994, Art Barr, who wrestled as the American Love Machine in Mexico, passed away. Barr was briefly employed by WCW in 1990, but was released. He would gain notoriety in Mexico working as Love Machine, wrestling under a mask before losing a mask versus mask match against Blue Panther. Barr would go on to team with Eddie Guerrero. The pair would appear on AAA's When Worlds Collide pay-per-view, which we'll cover in Volume 2, losing a double hair versus double mask match with El Hijo de Santo and Octagon.
It doesn't stand up to Mr. Backlund's chicken wing, so you listen here, Bulldog, and I want you to listen good. Do me one favor. When Mr. Backlund gets that chicken wing on my brother Brett, and he will, I want you to sit back and watch him suffer and let him suffer in agony before you throw the towel in.
Make it cry.
That's right.
Make it squeal.
Don't throw it in right away. Let's all watch him suffer for a little while, and then when you think he's had enough and you have a little compassion, throw in that towel, and we'll see a new WWF champion, the rightful owner, Mr. Backlund.
Well said. Well, let me tell you something. Owen Hart, the self-proclaimed King of Hearts, Bob Backlund, he's not going to put the cross-faced chicken wing on the Excellence of Execution. And second of all, the British Bulldog will not throw this towel in the ring at Survivor Series, no matter what Bob Backlund will or cannot do to Bret Hart. So let me tell you something. Get Bob Backlund and tell him to grab his best hold, which is the chicken wing, and try to put it on the Excellence of Execution.
And we will start this month's WWF review with the TV review before Survivor Series. Jerry the King Lawler is on commentary replacing the absent Randy Savage. Bret and Bulldog versus Owen Hart and Jim Neidhart. Match ended clearly as Bret submitted the anvil in the sharpshooter. A very good tag match all told. WWF Championship is in a submission match at Survivor Series. British Bulldog and Owen Hart will be in the respective corners of Bret Hart and Bob Backlund. Bulldog with a pink and black towel, and Owen Hart supposedly with a towel that Arnold Scarland used when Backlund lost the title all those years ago. King's Court segment with the 1-2-3 Kid, previewing his match with Bob Backlund on Raw next week. Backlund tries to blindside the Kid, but the Kid sees it coming, does a spinning back kick and sees him off. Bret runs out to the Kid's aid, and Owen and Anvil come out to calm down Backlund. Doink comes out with the three midgets, one of them sprays silly string at Lawler in his commentary position. After winning a squash match, Doink comes over to the announce table and steals Lawler's crown. At the conclusion of the show, Lawler is joined by Sleazy, Queasy and Cheesy at ringside and reprimands them for not having his back at ringside earlier, talking tactics with them. Lawler dares the three midget clowns to come out and join them, and they square off with the other midgets. At the end of the show, Bret says he considers 1-2-3 Kid versus Bob Backlund as the new generation versus the old generation, and that he will be in the Kid's corner to cheer on the new generation. On to the 14th of November edition of Raw. Bob Backlund defeats the 1-2-3 Kid with the cross-faced chicken wing. After the match, Backlund refuses to release the hold. Bret runs out and the pair brawl. They get broken up by WWF officials, but Bret then locks in the sharpshooter on the aisleway. Bret releases it very quickly, but then says on the microphone that at Survivor Series, he won't be releasing the hold. On the Survivor Series report, they are telling the story that just like the Royal Rumble, more members of the WWF roster will interfere in the classic match between Yokozuna and The Undertaker. They say that Chuck Norris is there to stop that. Chuck Norris will be the special guest enforcer during that match. A debut on the 14th of November show saw Aldo Montoya, the Portuguese Man-O-War, debuting, winning a squash match. If you watch a lot of Raw this year, you might remember Montoya as PJ Walker, although he was largely a jobber at that point. At the conclusion of the match, Ted DiBiase tried to buy him off, but Montoya refuses. On the 20th of November, we got an edition of Sunday Night Slam. This is the usual kind of pre-pay-per-view show. The Smoking Guns defeated the Heavenly Bodies via roll-up. And then the main event, Owen Hart versus the Bulldog, ended when Bob Backlund interfered and locked in the cross-faced chicken wing on Bulldog until Brett came out and beat up Backlund. On the 21st of November, we had the Monday Night Raw, the final one before the Thanksgiving Eve Survivor Series pay-per-view, which we'll cover in a second. Razor Ramon walking out for the opener, was attacked by members of the Teamsters. They delayed this until the end of the show, both men accompanied by their respective teams. A very good match, all told. Now we'll move on to the WWF Survivor Series 1994. Dell, the results.
Yep, starting off with the first elimination match tonight, Bob. We've got the Bad Guys, captained by Razor Ramon with a 1-2-3 Kid, British Bulldog and Fatu Nsione of the Head Shrinkers. And they defeated the Teamsters, captained by Shawn Michaels. He was teaming with Diesel, Owen Hart and Jim Neidhart and Jeff Jarrett. Second match tonight, we've got the comedy match with Jerry Lawler and these three kings. The Royal Family, as you see in the news, went over the Clowns R Us, captained by Doink. The mid-card was then the WWF title. And as again we've covered in the news, Bob Backlund would beat Bret Hart. That was after Helen had thrown in the towel at the bequest of Owen. The second last match, semi-main, was an elimination match with the Million Dollar Team. And it was Ted DiBiase's King Kong Bundy, Tatanka, Bam Bam Bigelow, Jimmy Del Rey and Tom Pritchard, the Heavenly Bodies. And they defeated Guts and Glory, Captain Bill X Luger. And he was with Mabel, Adam Bomb and the Smoking Guns, Billy and Bart. The main event saw The Undertaker with Paul Bearer defeating Yokozuna in the casket match. And that's where we went to.
That's where we are now. Chris, what do you think of this show?
I think it was a pretty solid show overall. I'd say the Survivor Series style elimination matches were all pretty solid. My only disappointment with it was the Bret Hart Bob Backlund match. I just don't think with it being a submission match, it allowed for much of anything other than, you know, going straight to submissions. I thought the ending was very good. Even if it stretched out a bit long. But yeah, as for the casket match, I mean, it's pretty standard, isn't it? I mean, you're not going to expect much from those two. But yeah, overall, it was all right, I'd say.
Yeah, I do agree with Chris there, Bob. I think that match in the middle did kind of drag out. We're having the submission stipulation that does kind of make for quite a slow match, quite a lot of rest spots. But overall, I was actually pretty disappointed with the pay-per-view. It's the risk you kind of take when you've got these multi-man matches where it can kind of expose the depth of the roster. But as I say, we'll come into it match by match. But overall, I thought it was pretty disappointing, to be honest.
Well, this is interesting. We've got Chris in the middle. Dell didn't like it, and I thought it was really good. It would be blasphemous to objectively say that this show was better than WrestleMania, because nobody's going to sustain an argument on that. But yeah, I'd probably say I enjoyed it more than WrestleMania 10 this year. Not to say the match quality was as good, but as we're going to come to, I thought they at times hit the heights and as well. Probably peaked with the first match. We'll come to that as we get to it. I agree with your, Chris, I agree with your reservations on the WWF title match, but then I think it took what could have been a very good match and made it a good match, even if the stuff with Owen did drag out long. And I thought the main event was pretty good as well. I mean, it probably doesn't help that I'm a really big Yokozuna fan. And so that probably meant I enjoyed the match more than maybe other people did. But I thought this was a very solid show. My only real criticism, it really, was I don't think they got the match order quite right. But we'll come to that as we get to it. We will start with, they start the show by showing each of the Survivor Series teams in kind of team talks, including the Doinks and the Royal Family. We open with Vince McMahon and Gorilla Monsoon wearing cowboy hats. Damn, they looked amazing.
Written thing.
Very good, very good. Then we start with the Teamsters, Diesel, Shawn Michaels, Jim the Anvil, Neidhart, Owen Hart and Jeff Jarrett versus the Bad Guys, led by Razor Ramon, the 1-2-3 Kid, the Head Shrinkers and the British Bulldog. The heel team walk out to Diesel's theme, with Diesel very much the front man. The faces walk out to Razor's theme, with Razor very much the front man. There are words exchanged between members. I should just say, by the way, all these match reviews are going to be quite long, so get ready for a lot of my talking. There's words exchanged between members of both teams before the match even starts, but we begin with the 1-2-3 Kid and Owen Hart, but Hart tags out straight away and brings in the Anvil. Anvil dominates the Kid with power before tagging in Jeff Jarrett. Shione gets tagged in and catches Jarrett off the ropes before picking you up for a plesh slam. Jarrett does a clothesline from the top, but Shione sends Jarrett airborne with a strong kick out before Jarrett tags in Owen to a lot of crowd boos. Shione tags in Bulldog. Bulldog catches Owen and slingshots him into the corner, where Owen gets beaten down by the faces. Bulldog picks him up for a press slam, then a sunset flip for a near fall. Bulldog sees off a 2-on-1 attack from Owen and Anvil before hitting a lovely stalling suplex. He tags in Fatu, but after failing to climb the top rope, does a headbutt from the top. Fatu worries about a loose boot before tagging in Razor, the story being that Fatu doesn't usually wrestle in boots. Jarrett hits an arm drag on Razor and then celebrates it like he's won the match. Razor sends Jarrett to the outside before striking Diesel and goading him to come into the ring. Michael stands on the ropes and tries to calm down Diesel. Shawn is giving Diesel instructions, who agrees to calm down but sounds reluctant. Razor hits Jarrett with a fall-away slam before tagging in the 1-2-3 Kid and hitting a fall-away slam on him into Jarrett for a near fall. Jarrett dumps the Kid to the outside, who nearly falls into the cameraman. Fatu does some dancing after Owen rounds his head off the turnbuckle. Fatu then nuts Owen in the crotch. Diesel gets tags in, hits a massive clothesline, then hits a jackknife, and the first elimination of the evening is Fatu. The 1-2-3 Kid jumps from the top rope and hits a sunset flip on Diesel. Diesel stands up in the move, picks up the Kid, does a double-handed choke drop bomb, followed by a jackknife, and eliminates the 1-2-3 Kid. It is 5-on-3. Diesel exchanges moves with Shione before hitting him with a jackknife, a sloppy one at best, and Shione is eliminated. It's now 5-on-2. Davey Boy fares a bit better before running into a big boot from Diesel. Shawn and Razor have some heated discussions. Diesel offers a tag, but Shawn refuses. Owen and Jarrett beat down on Bulldog on the outside. Ramon rolls up Diesel, but he kicks out. The commentators then say that Bulldog has been counted out. Razor and Diesel battle with Razor, taking him off his feet. Razor hits a Bulldog from the second rope, but Diesel kicks out. The crowd are fired up. Shawn is directing traffic from the apron. Diesel traffic, that is. It's said that Bulldog has left, and Razor is now on his own. Razor body slams Diesel and signals for the Razor's Edge. Diesel reverses it into a backdrop. Diesel hits the jackknife on Razor, and then Shawn finally says he wants the tag. Shawn signals for Diesel to come into the ring. He wants some help. Diesel picks up Razor. Shawn goes for the sweet chin music, but Razor ducks, and Diesel eats the finisher. Shawn argues with Diesel, who stands up to Shawn and signals to him. Diesel fights off his teammates who try and get in his way, and Diesel chases Shawn up the aisleway, followed by the rest of his team. Meanwhile, the referee counts out the heel team. Owen shouts, "Get in the ring, we're going to lose," but it's too late. The referee counts out all five members of the Teamsters, and Razor is the sole survivor. And that, my friends, is the longest match review I've ever done on the show. Dale, do some talking for me.
Which end could have star power in it, Bob? So I thought it was actually quite a weird position to have, like, say, Shawn, Diesel, Owen, Bulldog. I thought it was really kind of weird to have them up first. I was expecting the million-dollar team in Guts and Glory. I don't know about you.
Well, my reservations with the match order weren't surrounding this match, believe it or not. No. I thought this was about right. But no, I thought in terms of the guys involved, you're right. It was a bit of a mix in that you had kind of some very kind of big guys, not in terms of stature, in terms of star power rather than stature, like Shawn and Diesel and Razor and things like that, and Bulldog. And then mixed in with that, you had, you know, the Head Shrinkers.
Head Shrinkers, Jarrett and
things like that. But yeah, to answer that one, Chris, what do you think of this match?
Yeah, well, the thing is with Diesel, I just, with how well how hard they were pushing him in this match. It just made sort of Shawn. I mean, I get the they were going for the heel perspective with Shawn Michaels, but I just thought he just looked really weak. And especially with the count out at the end as well, I just didn't think it made him look good at all.
It's worth saying that Shawn is carrying, I think, a broken wrist or an arm injury or something like that, which probably explains his lack of action.
Well, yeah, because he wasn't in the match whatsoever. I just figured that was just a way of getting heat on him and, you know, making.
Well, I mean, it was well disguised. I mean, they turned an injury into a positive, I think, with that.
Yeah.
I thought they actually done quite well. I thought it really built up Shawn as that kind of cowardly heel. We've obviously seen a lot of him and Diesel together this year, and we're kind of having the expectations, obviously, of Diesel getting that push in the match, and then what would be happening in the next couple of days. I thought they really built up those two as the good guy and the bad guy pretty well. For me, it was the end that kind of showed a bit of weakness, Bob, with the full team going to chase after Shawn and Diesel, and I thought it kind of made the Lucio Owen and the Anvil and Jarrett look a bit weak, but actually.
See, that was my issue with it. It was just that they were just sort of, standing by, just so Diesel could have his moment. I can understand from a bookie's perspective, like I said, it was basically just, he was having another Rumble moment, whereas he was eliminating. Did he break the record for the time?
It was most eliminations, wasn't it, in terms
and it basically, they were just going for that again. Was it within 90 seconds he'd eliminated three guys?
Yeah. Three of them with a jackknife.
And obviously from what we found out after, it's obvious why they've done that. They want to build him up as quickly as possible. I just didn't like the way the other guys looked, coming out of it, especially with the count out. I mean, on the flip side, it made Razor Ramon look strong. Obviously, he come out the victor, but I thought the flow of the match was very good up until that point, and I think the match suffered as a result because of it.
I thought this was phenomenal. I don't know whether I was watching a different match to you guys, but I thought, in terms of the aim of this match was, and I don't know, I assume at this point they had Diesel's title win in mind. I mean, we'll come to that later in the show in terms of how that was stacking up. But the aim of this was to make Diesel look like a star. Mm. And he looked like an absolute star in this. And they had the brilliant back and forth between him and Shawn. And you'll hear a bit with Diesel promo later, which will cover kind of that as well. But, you know, with Shawn not wanting to tag in, obviously there's the real reason he couldn't tag in, but the whole point was that Shawn wanted to wait until the match was won, and then he said, right, now I'm tagging in, now let me finish it off. But to have the 10 minutes of action at the start where nobody really got an advantage, because it was quite an odd first 10 minutes in that there was no real story to it. A lot of people got in, there was some interactions, but nobody ever got close to eliminating anyone. And you watch thinking where this is going. And then Diesel gets tagged in and three guys get wiped out in 90 seconds. To me, that is how you make a guy look like a star. Yeah. You say, have 10 minutes of flat, and then Diesel comes in and just runs through three guys. Yeah. Minor criticism, how they got rid of Bulldog, given that basically Bulldog was the legal man. But then he got thrown to the outside by Diesel. Bulldog then gets attacked by Owen and Jarrett and then gets counted out. And I thought, well, that's strange. You've got Bulldog, the legal man, getting eliminated by two guys who aren't legal, which you would figure wouldn't be a cause for elimination. Razor Ramon's still in the apron, doesn't really care about this, seemingly. And then he jumps in the ring and rolls up Diesel before Bulldog's even been eliminated, and the ref counts the count. That was my only problem with this match. Other than that, I thought it was great. It was really good action. And Diesel he left a star, I thought.
Yep, I mean, it's some, as we say, we've seen him at the Royal Rumble, we've then seen him getting that title match at the King of the Ring. This was the ultimate for him coming in, as you say, after a pretty slow, unstoried first 10 minutes to get the jackknife and go one down for the good guys was a good bit of timing for him, but then it just went two, it went three, and as you say, the point of this match must have obviously been to set up firstly, the dissension between Diesel and Shawn, but ultimately building Diesel up as that next guy. And as you say, if that was the job, they certainly done it.
And in terms of the finish, I quite like that as well. I mean, it was a bit hokey, and I'd almost rather have Owen not say, let's get back to the ring, because then my next thought process is, well, why didn't you? Because you still could have stayed in the match, but it was the most logical way of doing it. And even the convoluted way they got rid of Bulldog, protected Bulldog, because obviously he's got a major part to play in the title match. We'll come to that when we get to it. Go on, Chris.
Yeah, that's my issue with it, how Owen Hart and Bulldog were sort of, they're involved in the main event angle, even though it's on the mid card of the show. Yeah, they just didn't appear to have much role in this match at all.
It's almost the match those two shouldn't have been in.
It was just, they were fillers. They were just like jobbers, you know, just filling the parts. I mean, I mean, as a sort of, to put them with Diesel and Shawn Michaels, I mean, that's a strong team, especially with Jeff Jarrett as well. Maybe that's what they were looking at rather than having two, another tag team in there. But I thought they could have been utilized a lot better, especially at the end. They disappeared and they got counted out. I don't know. I thought it could have been booked better.
I will give them credit for what I would consider a clever finish rather than one that was perhaps you might view as a bit of a cop-out. Anyway, we move on backstage and Shawn Michaels says he has made Diesel. He said he deserves better and that he's finished with him. Shawn jumps in a car and drives off.
I got news for you. Can you even believe that ungrateful leak, what he just did to me? I made that guy. I got news for you. Did you ever hear a Big Daddy call before you heard Shawn Michaels? No, never. And he treats me like that. That's it. I'm finished with this. I'm there, you know, you think I'd know better. Come on. I'd know better, this tag team stuff. He turned his back on me like a rabid dog. I had nothing to do with him ever again.
Wait a minute, we've located Diesel. I don't understand.
He's doing this. He turned on me like a rabid dog. I made him. He's a zero without me.
Hey, Todd, I think we've located Diesel. He's a zero without you. Wait a minute, what's that? I think we've located Diesel. Diesel is on his way.
Oh, you tell Big Daddy Cool. He needs your eyes. Try hitting the pavement. Hit the bricks.
No, he's on his way.
Next up, the Royal Family. Jerry the King Lawler, Sleazy, Queasy and Cheesy versus Clowns R Us, Doink the Clown, Dink, Wink and Pink. We start with Lawler and Doink. Lawler reacts negatively to the Burger King chance as we get underway. Lawler catches Doink's leg but gets hit with an enziguri. Lawler crawls to his corner and gets some attention from his royal family. We then get the reverse situation with Doink catching Lawler's foot. Lawler goes to the enziguri, but Doink ducks, and once again Lawler goes scurrying through his corner as he lands on his face. Doink has Lawler in an armbar. The midget clowns run over and taunt the midget royal family. The royals run back across the ring, stepping on Lawler's chest in the process. They then run back across him. Lawler is not impressed. Lawler then does the reverse armbar as his midgets run across Doink's chest. They run back across, but as they do, they collide with each other and fall over. Doink hits Lawler with 3 consecutive body slams. The clowns go to pin Lawler, with Doink doing the counting. Lawler pushes the one clown off. Doink catches him and stands him up. Rinse and repeat twice more. Lawler repeats the trick, but Doink throws one of the raw midgets into Lawler, who flattens him in the process. Doink knocks in an arm lock, but one of the midgets comes out and puts a plastic crown on Lawler's head with Burger King written on it. Lawler is pissed. Doink puts Dink on his shoulders, walks across the ring and freaks out Lawler by shimmying side to side. Lawler goes to do it with Queasy, but instead he climbs on Queasy's shoulders. Queasy, to his credit, does actually manage to walk a couple of paces before dropping Lawler flat on his face. The midgets then start doing a double crisscross while colliding with each other. Lawler strikes Doink, then appears to put something in his trunks. The three midgets set their feet on the ropes, but Lawler gets slingshotted into Doink rather than the other way round. Doink goes for a crossbody from the top rope, but Lawler rolls through it, grabs his trunks, and Doink is eliminated. Dink bites one of the midgets on the backside. Lawler comes in, but Lawler gets himself bitten. Wink grabs Cheesy by his goatee, and Dink drops an armbar. Cheesy pings Wink to thank Lawler for putting his foot on Cheesy's back, and Wink is eliminated. Sorry, Lawler puts his foot on Cheesy's back, which causes the elimination. Sleazy tries a handspring back elbow, but falls on his back. Sleazy hangs Pink on his head, then spins him around. Lawler drops Cheesy onto Pink, and Pink is eliminated. Pink slides under the ring, but is not seen by anyone but the cameraman. Dink butts Sleazy and Cheesy together before climbing to the top and hitting a crossbody. He goes for the pin, but Lawler gets involved. Lawler distracts the ref. Cheesy flips the pin over, and Dink is eliminated. Del, I wanted to hate this match. And I think after Doink got eliminated, I probably did. But the first 6 or 7 minutes of this match were a riot.
Honestly, Bob, I absolutely loved it. I thought it was really, really good stuff. I mean, there was bits of it where you're kind of expecting it going in, but it did kind of turn into a bit of a carry-on film in the middle. But, I mean, I think in contrast to what my thoughts were on the opening match, I was expecting quite a lot getting into that with Owen. I'm a great Owen fan. Sean and Razor had that ladder match at Mania. You've got Diesel, you've got Bulldog. I was expecting a lot getting into that. This, I wasn't expecting anything. But for the time that they got, the layout of the match, the spots that were planned, I thought they'd done absolutely brilliant. As I say, I loved it.
Chris?
Yeah, my issues with it was the placing on the card. I didn't like it. I mean, like I said, the whole show was weird, but I just thought that it would probably serve better for me to be sort of, I don't know, maybe the toilet break before the main event or just a bit before. To have it follow the opening match, I just... I agree with you both in that there was a couple of good spots in it, and yeah, there was a few laughs, but I just thought it was just a weird placement, and because of that, I think it suffered.
No, I take the point on the match placement, and I'm in agreement that this match I would have put sandwiched between the two big matches on the show, and I've moved the Guts and Glory and the $1 million team match to this place in the card, but. As comedy goes, I thought this is about as good as it gets. It's convoluted in that, you know, everything Doink does to Lawler then does back and it's set up and all of that. But it was really funny. And the crowd were really into it.
Yeah, there was stuff I was definitely amused by, a couple of spots, definitely.
But I mean, we can pick apart this match if we like. I mean, the whole thing that they said, well, Lawler and Doink can only wrestle each other and the midgets can only wrestle each other. And then we get the thing where, well, Doink gets eliminated. So then what the hell are we going to do for the rest of the match? Yeah.
And after
Doink got eliminated, I think the match did take a bit of a nosedive. But that being said, I thought this was about as good as comedy gets. Maybe I was in a good mood when I watched this show, but I thought this was really good. Anyway. After the match, Lawler grabs the mic to a chorus of boos. Lawler berates the three midgets, saying he made winners out of them and tells them to kiss his royal feet. The three midgets start celebrating again. Lawler says he hates short people. They celebrate on the outside and Lawler runs after them. The midget clowns re-emerge from under the ring and the six midgets run after Lawler. Lawler runs up the aisleway. He thinks he's out of danger, but Doink comes out with a pie and mushes it straight into Lawler's face. We then get a backstage with Todd Pettengill introducing footage of Alunda Blaze wrestling in front of over 40,000 people in Japan. Born Nakano defeats her for the WWF Women's title. Nakano, backstage with Pettengill, cuts a promo in Japanese. Pettengill talks slowly. She talks back in Japanese. It was as awkward as it sounds.
Yep.
We then get the WWF title match, Bret Hart with the British Bulldog versus Bob Backlund with Owen Hart. The stipulation, the match is a submission match, and the only way to win is for your opponent's ring man to throw the towel in and end the match. Owen and Bret's parents, Stu and Helen Hart, are at ringside. Bret starts with a body slam and an arm drag, and Backlund falls to the outside. Owen gives Backlund a pep talk. Backlund falls out again, but Bulldog acts as a lumberjack and throws him back in. Vince says that 79% of people on the hotline voted the chicken wing as the more dangerous move than the sharpshooter, which I thought was pretty interesting, actually. Backlund goes for the chicken wing, but Bret scrambles clear and locks in a chin lock. Backlund goes for a chicken wing again, but Bret reverses it into a belly-to-belly suplex. Bret goes for a sharpshooter, but Backlund kicks him off. Vince, more than once during the match, mentions pinfalls despite the fact that pins aren't valid. Backlund goes to work on Bret's left arm, using the ropes for some unique moves. Bret gets distracted by Owen. Backlund nearly takes advantage, but he sees it coming. Bret hits a swinging neck breaker, but Backlund keeps hold of Bret's wrist, which he has locked in. Bret escapes Backlund's myriad of arm locks and goes for a sharpshooter, but Backlund resists. Hart then locks in a figure four leg lock. Backlund looks over at Owen, who initially refuses the idea and then takes a look at the towel. Backlund is flagging, but Owen stands strong and says the towel is staying right there. Backlund rolls it over and the pressure is now on Bret, and in turn, Davey Boy. Owen goes to the Bulldog, who refuses. Bret rolls it back over, but Backlund reaches the ropes and the move is broken up. Bret finally starts working Backlund's leg. Okay, I'll I'll take the figure four as given, but I thought, given that his submission move is a sharpshooter, he should have started this far earlier. Backlund levels the score with a pile driver. Backlund whips Brett into the corner, charges at him, but Brett moves and Backlund shoulder drives into the ring post. Brett swings for Bob, who ducks and locks in a sleeper hold. Brett rallies and returns the favour with a pile driver, then a bulldog, then a backbreaker, then drops the fist from the top rope before going for a sharpshooter. Backlund reaches the ropes, but Brett pulls him off and finally cinches it in. Owen stands on top of the apron. Bulldog chases him, but Owen manages to hit a bulldog on Brett with the ref distracted. Bulldog runs after Owen, but Owen ducks and Bulldog slams into the ring steps. Backlund locks in the chicken wing on Brett. Brett rallies but cannot escape. Owen looks concerned for the unconscious Bulldog. This takes a lot of time, with Owen trying to revive Bulldog while Brett still has it locked in. Brett hangs on in there, but he's fading, manages to get to his feet until Bulldog drops him. Referee Earl Hebner indicates to Owen that he cannot end the match. The towel must be thrown into the ring by Bulldog. Owen goes over to his mother, visibly upset. He says she has to do something, indicating she should throw in the towel. Brett is still conscious, but otherwise done for. He's in the hole for well over 5 minutes by this point. Owen pleads with his mother again, moves the barricade. Helen Hart walks out as the Stew over the still unconscious Bulldog, who's probably still asleep. He takes the towel from Stew, Helen takes the towel, but Stew takes it from her. The crowd rally behind Brett, but Helen throws the towel into the ring, and Bob Backlund is your new WWF champion. Owen, who's been sympathetic throughout this bit, begging and pleading with his mother to throw in the towel, legs it to the back. Brett is then helped to the back by his mum and dad and some WWF officials, and Backlund is presented with the title. Brett reacts to the announcement, but eventually walks off as Backlund celebrates. Chris, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm not a massive fan of submission matches anyway. I just think that the sequence it's always going to end in a submission move. There's no room for surprises or quick falls or, you know, and for me, because of that, I don't think I enjoyed it. I mean, it wasn't bad. And the ending, it just dragged. 9 minutes is a long time to be in a submission move. I think if they'd cut that in half, they'd still have the same outcome, and I still think it'd work just as well. Undecided, I can't make my mind up whether I like the actual finish of Owen Hart chucking in the towel.
Helen Hart.
Owen obviously making Helen chuck in the towel. I don't know. Undecided. No. I just not sure.
For me, there was two sides to it, Bob. There was the match itself, and there was the story. The match for me was largely disappointing, kind of similar to Chris. I'm not a great fan of the setup and the stipulation of the match, because it does kind of lead to a lot of rest holds. Backlund for me, as we said last month when we were anticipating this, I was never a great fan of Backlund in his original run, but over the last couple of weeks in Raw, I've kind of learned to appreciate what he does for a promo point of view. He was really getting in with the crowd and getting the heat up, and I thought it would be really interesting to see him go with Brett in this match, but it kind of looked like when you're putting Backlund and Hart in the same ring, Backlund stood out in his original run because of his technical skills that kind of put him on a pedestal higher than who he was going against in the kind of land of the 80s and the Giants. Bret Hart, for me, could wrestle rings round Backlund these days. He'd looked really off the pace. I just thought it was kind of like looking at Backlund's original title run. It's like having like an old Jaguar for like the late 70s, early 80s, and putting it up against a Lambo or a Ferrari for the 90s. It just didn't match up for me. So the match I thought was pretty disappointing. But the story with Owen and Brett, I mean, that's a rivalry that's been going on for the best part of a year now. I think it was back at Survivor Series 93 where they kind of planted the seeds with us, with Brett and Owen. And it's still captivating to me. I thought the end, it was really good. It was a bit played out, as you say. I mean, I think it was, 8 or 9 minutes that chicken wing was on.
Yeah.
And then the kind of drama with Stu and Helen at ringside and Owen. I thought Owen Hart was the star of the show here. I thought he'd done brilliant with the kind of emotions that he was showing and the kind of stress for Brett. And then the turn at the end with that promo with Todd Pettingill. As I say, for me, match disappointing, but the story certainly intriguing, and I thought they did it really well.
I think that the actual story that was being told, I thought it's just, it was, for me, it was just plainly obvious, obviously, that Owen was acting out that. I think that sort of thing had worked, maybe around, was it the Royal Rumble where they had the tag match? You know, around that sort of time, but after they've had the matches.
Yeah, they had a tag match with the Quebecers, wasn't it?
Quebecers, that's right, yeah. And I think that sort of thing had worked a lot better earlier on in the feud, as opposed to, I mean, I think, I don't see them going on from this. And I just, even though I like the ending, I don't know, I think it was wasted. I think it was a wasted spot that could have been done much earlier in the rivalry.
Yeah, a lot of the points you two have touched on, I'm largely in agreement with. Firstly, I think, while the stipulation of the match, like, really lended itself to the finish, it probably undercut the match quite a lot. And that's the second time Brett's been in a match where I think, you know, they've denied him the opportunity. Well, a lot of people thought the cage match at SummerSlam was really good, but I actually thought the stipulation didn't lend itself to a great match. I think I think you're right here in terms of there were so many rest holes, there wasn't really any kind of action in the middle. And yes, the bit at the end did go on too long. But it was a really, really good story. It, you know, I do have one major problem with it, and we're going to discuss it properly at the end, so I only mention it now because we've got to get to the rest of the show. But my major problem with all this was that the story coming out of this is that Owen Hart obviously was, you know, pretending to, you know, have some compassion, you know, like, you know, feeding Brett's pain. And then obviously when Helen throws in the towel, it's all a ploy, it's all a setup, and Owen runs to the back like he's just, you know, won the lottery essentially, and, you know, he's giddy. My problem with all this was that what part of Owen Hart wanting the match to end made him a heel, given that Brett was done for? Brett was in that mat hole for 9 minutes. Now, okay, he hadn't given up, not that he could do in this match format, as we know. He was still conscious, and I kind of feel, given that you've made the chicken wing the big brutey finisher, I thought that 9 minutes was way too long for a guy to be in that and still be, you know, in it. But what part of, well, don't discuss it now, we'll close the end. What part of Owen Hart pleading with his mother to end the match was a heel move? And I don't particularly understand what part it was, other than the fact that Owen was showing compassion and then didn't. I don't think the idea of ending the match was a particularly heel move, given that Brett was...
He was gonna lose the match anyway, so,
We will come to that later in the show. That's one of our discussion points later on. Anyway, backstage we get an Owen promo. He's talking with Todd Pettingill.
A setup! You got it right, that was a setup! This is the greatest Thanksgiving of my life! And Mom and Dad, you fell right into my trap! You threw the towel in, and Brett, you're no longer the WWF champion! Mr. Backlund is! And Brett, I could have beaten you before, but you cheated! But now, you're nothing! You're below me! You're down there in the gutter, Brett! You're not a champion anymore! You're a loser! And I'm a king! And Brett, you're a nobody! I'm gonna be the WWF Tag Team Champion! I am gonna be a WWF Intercontinental Champion! And Brett, I am gonna be the WWF World Heavyweight Champion! And I, unlike you, will never quit! I will never surrender! You're a quitter, Brett. Mom and Dad threw in the towel, and you're history, Brett. And I am the best there is, the best there was, and the best there ever will be. Don't you forget it, brother. Woo!
We then get the million-dollar team to tank up Bam Bam Bigelow, King Kong Bundy of the Heavenly Bodies versus Guts and Glory, Lex Luger, Mabel, the Smoking Guns, and Adam Bomb. Tatanka backs into Luger as the match begins. Tatanka top chops Luger, but that seems to fire Luger up. Tatanka suplexes Luger, who flips straight back up. Luger knocks Tatanka through the ropes, then wipes out Tom Pritchard, then picks up Jimmy Del Rey and throws him into Bam Bam. Bundy gets in the ring, but Mabel follows and squares up to him. Mabel hits a back body drop to Tom Pritchard, then hits a crossbody from the second rope, and Tom Pritchard is eliminated. Gigolo Jimmy Del Rey comes into the ring, but Mabel drops him. In comes Bundy. They bounce off each other. Mabel then shoulder tackles into the mat. Mabel hits a falling back kick to Bam Bam before climbing to the top rope. Bam Bam jumps up and throws into the mat before going to the top himself and goes for a sunset flip. Very impressive. This flips right over the top of Mabel. Mabel stands up on it and sits down on him. Mabel clotheslines himself and Bam Bam to the outside to gas from the crowd. Mabel seemingly gets eliminated after being counted out. Billy Gunn and Jimmy Del Rey are in the ring. Del Rey hits a super kick, but Gunn kicks out. Gunn reverses another pin and into a bridge for spinning it into a backslide for a two count. Bam Bam and Adam Bomb are in next. Bomb hits a slingshot shoulder charge from the apron. Bam then hits a very impressive moonsault to Adam Bomb and eliminates him. Luger rolls up Bam Bam and almost gets a three count. Jimmy Del Rey super kicks Luger, beating him down in the corner. Luger comes back and hits a lovely clothesline and Jimmy Del Rey is eliminated. The Guns do some lovely tag team work onto Tatanka, including a lovely doubles team slide slam. Bart goes for a crucifix pin, but Tatanka stops him, hits a sloppy Samoan drop, and Bart Gunn is eliminated. Billy Gunn goes to leapfrog him, but Tatanka catches him and hits a sort of spine buster. Enter Bundy. Bundy squashes Gunn in the corner, then drops an elbow, and Billy Gunn is eliminated. Luger is all alone up against Bam Bam, Bundy, and Tatanka. There are massive USA chants. Luger valiantly fights off all three, almost getting a three count on Tatanka. The crowd are not happy, it was only a two. Luger gets beaten down by all three men. Bundy drops an elbow and Luger barely kicks out. Tatanka drops three consecutive elbows, poses for the crowd, but Luger rolls him up and eliminates Tatanka. As he does that, Bundy pounces, splashes Luger, eliminates him, and Bam Bam and King Kong Bundy are the sole survivors. After the match, three continue the beatdown on Luger. Tatanka hits a Samoan drop. The babyfaces run out and run them off. Luger sells an injury and is seen by his teammates. Chris, what do you think?
This is the one match that surprised me. I wasn't expecting a great deal from it at all, given who was in the match. But there was a sort of 5 minutes near the start where you had Bam Bam, Mabel, and they pulled off a couple of really impressive spots, I thought, especially Mabel. He went to the top a couple of times, and I was not expecting that from him at all. Bam Bam Bigelow, I'm a massive fan of him anyway. But I thought up until the big guys left, when they left, I thought the match slowed down and that's when it sort of lost its steam a bit. I thought it was better than what I expected it to be.
It's funny, I kind of had the opposite view that I thought that the better part of this match was actually kind of the final third when we got some pretty nice tag team action from the Guns and then kind of that finish as well. I thought that was the best part of it. Although not to disagree with the idea, you know, whether it's Bam Bam or Vader, a big guy doing a moonsault is tremendous. Yeah. Del, what did you think?
I kind of feel bad, but for me, it was another disappointment, to be honest. I think going back to what Chris was touching on, Mabel was actually pretty impressive in this for me. That top rope dive to the mat was really impressive because, I mean, you see Bam Bam is a big guy, but Mabel's just something else. Sorry, Chris, on you go, mate.
Yeah, no, sorry. The touching on that cross, it was a cross body, wasn't it? And he got the pinfall, and I just thought that was phenomenal. I'm not a fan of Mabel anyway, but when he did that impressed me a great deal.
That's it. I mean, because we're used to seeing it with Bam Bam with that moonsault, and as you say, Bob, it was lovely moonsault that he'd done. As I say, Mabel just really surprises you. You kind of expect it with Bam Bam, but Mabel just kind of came out the sky from nowhere. The only thing that disappointed me was a pretty weak finish with the count out. It was basically a double clothesline spot with Mabel on Bam Bam, and Mabel doesn't get back into the ring and ends up losing the getting to counted out for the elimination.
That's the seventh count out finish of the evening, Matt.
Of the evening so far.
For what that's worth.
But as I say, for me, it was again pretty disappointing. The first elimination match tonight, I was expecting big things with the names in it, and it had that Diesel Shawn story that was really good. This one, it kind of built the crowd up for a bit of a disappointment at the end with Luger being the 3-1 down. You think, oh, maybe they're giving Lex another chance here. And then Bundy comes in at the end to steal it to get the win for the $1 million team. But again, there was some good stuff, as you say, Bob. The Guns were looking pretty good in the middle, really good back and forth tagging with them. As I say, Mabel impressed me, but for me, again, it was a bit of a disappointment overall.
Dale, what do you think of Bundy? Because I think he's the big focus coming out of this match as mm-hmm. well. We'll come to the bit with The Undertaker when we get to it, but what do you think of that?
I think, again, it's another bit of a worry for me, Bob, to be honest. Kind of similar to Backlund, I was never a big fan originally of King Kong Bundy. But I mean, when they're kind of losing names like Hulk Hogan and things over the last few months, kind of, you can see why they're wanting to bring these names in and kind of give it a bit of recognition back to maybe like a casual viewer tuning in. If they see Bundy, they'll think, oh, remember him at WrestleMania 2? I'm going to tune in and see what they're doing with him. But for me, again, it was a name that I don't think they really need. Situations like this with the amount of guys in one match, I mean, you're talking three matches here and you're talking 24 people in it. So, I mean, it is easy to see why they're bringing these guys in. But again, for me, I think if you're looking for a big man, you've got Bam Bam Bigelow 2 feet away from him in the apron. I don't think you necessarily need a Bundy to come in for that. But as I say, I can see the point for a business point of view and try to get that name in there. And whether it's going to be that he's going on to bigger things in the next few weeks and months, we'll need to wait and see.
No, I mean, for me, this was probably kind of the least interesting match of the night. And I guess if you want to say worse, you can say worse. But I thought the action was good. I like how they use Luger, given that they kind of had that hope spot towards the end. I thought this was a very mm-hmm. well-paced match. This match I would have had second on the card. I think I'd have swapped this one with the Clowns R Us match, and then we can talk about whether the Brett Backlund match should have gone on last, I suppose. But no, I thought this was a good match, and you know what? And as I kind of say in volume 3 of the WCW stuff, whether you're talking about going with a guy that we might not agree with, you've gone with him. And this was important. And they did that. And they made Bundy look like a big deal, regardless of whether we think he's a good move or not. They did get that right. And then after the match, we get a Todd Pettengill promo with Bob Backlund.
First of all, young man, it's Mr. Bob Backlund. And you're incorrect. I've been the champion since 1978. I never lost the championship. Tonight, I just regained the belt, and I beat the man that represents your society. I beat him so I could save you. I'm going to scrutinize you to the fullest, pasteurize you, homogenize you, and synchronize you back into morality. You understand, ladies and gentlemen? It's sports education. I'm your champion, and I'll take on anybody at all, ladies and gentlemen, in your generation, because I'm fighting for something that's more important than anything in this world, is put morality back into your lives. And now your children have somebody that they can emulate after and try to catch up to. Because I feel like God!
To the main event, The Undertaker with Paul Bearer versus Yokozuna with Jim Cornette in a casket match with Chuck Norris as the special guest enforcer. The casket has a black covering on it with Rest in Peace written on it and a picture of The Undertaker, which I thought was a trifle unfair.
Yeah.
Yokozuna squashes Taker in the corner, but Taker pops back up and squares up to him. Taker whips Yoko towards the casket, who pulls up scared. Taker dumps him on top of the casket. Taker then hits an old school, but Yokozuna stays on his feet. Taker runs off the ropes, but Yokozuna nails a lovely Samoan drop as the crowd gasp. Taker then sits up. Yokozuna tries to push him into the casket, but Taker fights back. Yokozuna plants Taker onto the canvas, then drops a leg. Yokozuna rolls Taker into the casket. Taker looks limp and ends up 90% of the way in, but uses his arm to fight off the lid being closed. He knocks Yokozuna in with him, and they fight inside the casket. Mr. Fuji grabs a hold of Taker's hair, and Taker goes after him. Taker then lays out Cornette, a lovely Cornette facial expression once he hits the mat. That was fantastic. The pair fight in the ring. Taker slams Yokozuna's head into the mat and the crowd gasps. Paul Bearer is admiring his own reflection in the giant urn. Taker goes to the top and hits a lovely flying clothesline. Taker starts rolling Yokozuna across the ring towards the casket. Out comes Bundy. Chuck Norris is stood by the casket facing the aisleway. Two referees block Bundy's path and out comes Bam Bam Bigelow. IRS comes from the opposite side of the arena through the ring and attacks Undertaker. Norris stands off Bam Bam and Bundy but seems oblivious to what's happening in the ring. IRS knocks Undertaker inside the casket. IRS then hotfoots it. Yokozuna gets near the casket, but Taker then chokes him and climbs back into the ring. Out comes Jeff Jarrett. Chuck Norris then kicks him in the chest. Taker fights Yokozuna in the ring, slugging him with rights, and then hits a running clothesline and a DDT. Hits a running big boot and knocks Yokozuna inside, grabs Mr. Fuji's Japanese flag, snaps it across his knee, throws it in the casket, closes the lid, wins the match. Taker and Bearer celebrating in the ring. Dale, what did you think?
How good was that Paul Bearer lookalike before the start of this match, Bob?
Tremendous.
What a competition. You'd think if maybe just Paul Bearer had done a bit of weight. For me, leading into this match of the night, honestly, so far for me, is the Kings and the Clowns. It's kind of one of those matches where we talked about it last month, Bob, with the placement of the title on a card we thought Taker and Yoko might headline, but it should really be the title. Going on match quality, undoubtedly they got the main event right. I thought it really delivered. It had a big match feel. As you say, Cornette played his part on the outside. Paul Bearer done his job as well. It's kind of similar to the title match when it's a casket match or a submission match. You know how it's going to end, and it can take away a lot of the tension some of the time. But this one, for me, I thought it was just two big behemoths battering each other. I thought they'd done great. Yoko's selling, I thought, was brilliant. It's the first I've really noticed that from him. I know you're a big fan, Bob. It's
huge.
It's taken me a bit longer to get into him, but the selling, I thought, was terrific through the full match.
But one thing I will say about this is that I think this match benefited from not being too long.
Yep.
And I think you can look at every other match on this card. And okay, it was only a 5-match card, and we've criticised, you know, them at King of the Ring for trying to jam 10 matches onto a pay-per-view and all of that. This was the perfect length for the main event.
I thought they'd done brilliant. I mean, I think we started kind of talking about it just over half an hour before the end of the show. But with the introductions, with Chuck Norris being there, I thought the actual match itself was timed perfectly. As you say, there was enough time to build up that tension there between the two. The bells, not really bells and whistles, but the extra additions to it, like Cornette and Bearer, the run-in for the $1 million team, the IRS spot, and then Chuck Norris and Jarrett, it all played in really well. It was the best kind of timed match of the night for me, and as I say, I thought it was a really, really solid main event.
Chris?
Yeah, pretty standard casket match, really. I think it served its purpose in with the outside interference in setting up future feuds. I just think that with the first match they had at the Royal Rumble, it had a lot to live up to, because I really, really enjoyed that match.
Did you?
I think, I loved it.
Did you watch the same match as I did?
No, I loved it. I mean, I think a lot of it was just the ending of it. I don't know. I really enjoyed it. I just think this could have benefited from a different match, a different style of match, and I just don't think that, with it being a casket match, it could have been better. I don't think these two would have pulled off a decent just a one-on-one singles match. I just think they could have done something a bit different. But overall, I thought it was
haywire tonight, because I thought this was a really good main event.
It's a space of life, Bob.
It benefited from not being too long, which I think was important, because, you know, you've got Undertaker and Yokozuna, you don't want to make the match go too long. Action was really good. I'm a massive Yokozuna fan, so I'm probably sat there just giddy at everything he's doing while other people are going, what's the appeal?
I agree. I'm a massive Yokozuna fan as well. I just think that they could have benefited from using him a different way as opposed to just another casket match. I just don't think it was, we've seen it.
Did it not make sense, given that they had the casket match in January, which Yokozuna lost, and the casket match is Undertaker's match? So I think he had to, He had to win it
to get his win back. To get his win back, yeah. I just don't think the casket was needed.
Didn't he have to get the win back in the casket match? Because the casket matches his gimmick.
Yeah, perhaps, yeah. I mean, looking at it, it is a way of writing off Yokozuna as well. But I don't know. It's the same with the submission match. It's always going to be one outcome. It was plodding on till the end, and I just, even though the match itself, I enjoyed it. It's just, the ending, I think they could have done something a little bit different for me.
Chris, what do you think of the usage of Chuck Norris?
As a name, I think it's great. I just don't see the logic in how, as an outside enforcer, Chuck Norris on his own can stop 10 guys from the roster coming in and
isn't that the idea that only Chuck Norris can do that? Isn't that the gimmick?
It is, yeah, but it's just, I had a hard time believing that Bam Bam Bigelow and Bundy couldn't get past him.
Well, rumour has it Chuck Norris kicked Jeff Jarrett that hard they can actually sing now.
Oh, well,
very good. Very good. Very good.
I did like him. It was a good use of it. But it's sometimes you can't look too far in logic in wrestling, but that one just, it chuckled me more than anything. On the other side, it kind of makes the wrestlers look a little bit weak when these two guys can't, get past Chuck Norris.
For me, all it really added, Bob, Chuck Norris, Texas Ranger, check your local TV listings. That was that for me.
It was a gimmick match, there was a lot going on, but I don't think this match would have benefited any more had Chuck Norris played a bigger part, in that he was limited. It was a name that they used to promote the show rather than anything they really utilised within the match itself. It wasn't the best looking kick to Jarrett. Maybe it was just the one he was most comfortable doing, but it was kind of the sort of kick that if you saw in a match wouldn't look all that impressive. It was the sort of kick that they had to kind of sell the luster and the star of Chuck Norris to really be able to put across. Now also we've got the bit with IRS coming from the opposite side, and all that. Chris, your final thoughts on this show and a score rating?
Final thoughts. Yeah. I'd say it was pretty solid. It served its purpose booking wise. I think it sets up a lot of views. Just disappointed in the lack of decent singles action, really. I thought, with the stipulations, it limited what I thought could have been otherwise a decent show. I'd give it a 6.5 out of 10.
Del?
For me, again, Bob, pretty disappointed. I don't know whether it was my own fault. I seem to be kind of getting into the matches expecting, with the first one with Sean and Razor and Diesel, and kind of expecting a lot out of that. Disappointed me. The Kings and the Clowns expected nothing and it really delivered. Overall, I've just gave it a 5. There was some disappointing matches, but some kind of good stories in it as well. But for me, it was just a really slow, really poorly paced, apart from the main event. There wasn't much to it. And as I say, I thought it kind of exposed the roster with having those multi-man matches in it. We could maybe have had a Nakano Alundra Blaze match in the middle, or we could have maybe got in some, kind of maybe taking an elimination match and putting in a tag team. It was pretty disappointing for me. But next one's a Royal Rumble, so onwards and upwards.
I gave this show a 7.5. I didn't think there was a bad match on it. There were matches that maybe could have been slightly better. But from a booking standpoint, I mean, alright, forget the comedy match, but the four matches that mattered, they got Diesel coming out of the opener looking like a star. Then they had Bob Backlund coming out of his title match looking like a star. Okay, he didn't carry that very far. But the one thing I think we probably didn't discuss in all that was just how effective Backlund looked, given that, to win the title we'll come to that later, what I thought was an incredibly definitive fashion. We then had Bundy coming out, squashing Luger. Luger, who, while they're not doing a ton with, is still a guy with a lot of equity. Bundy came out looking like a star. And then the main event, a definitive win for Taker, gets his win back in a casket match, which I think is quite important. And a really enjoyable show. And we'll come back for the TV review post Survivor Series. Well, I say TV review, we're actually going to start with a live event review. We got to the 26th of November, a Madison Square Garden house show. Bob Backlund defending his WWF title against Diesel, replacing the kayfabe injured Bret Hart. WWF announced on WWF Mania that morning that they will be opening up their hotline for live commentary of the main event at 9:30pm Eastern Time. Furthermore, it was announced that the match was a no DQ, no count out, and no submission match, which I think is a tad unfair. The match itself lasted under 10 seconds. Diesel hit the jackknife powerbomb on Backlund, covered him for the 3 count, and we have a new WWF champion. We then cut to Raw, and they start beginning with airing footage of Diesel's title win. Bret phones in during an Owen Hart squash match, says he was still suffering from injuries and reckons he will be out of action until the new year. IRS, who along with the rest of the Million Dollar Stable, started the feud with The Undertaker. Bizarrely, perhaps, a Druid was at ringside for the IRS-Adam Bomb match, but helped out IRS during and after the match. Lex Luger came out after the match and ran off the Druid and IRS. We got a Diesel promo, his first as champion. He says that if he'd have got hold of Sean on the night of Survivor Series, he'd have done him in. He also described himself as running out of gas, quote, or should I say, Diesel, during the match. Mudon's talk about his MSG match, so he was walking through New York and, quote, a couple of hundred people came up to him and wished him good luck for his title match. I presume not at the same time. I think it was cumulatively a couple of hundred people. Although he is tall, I suppose. He said that he respected Backlund's abilities and didn't know how he'd be able to handle the cross-wing chicken, as he called it, before saying that he was a fighting champion like Bret Hart. Told Bret to enjoy his time off, but when he wants his title shot, he can get it. He finished with, on lives the new generation in the World Wrestling Federation. And then Backlund on commentary said that he can recover from adversity like nobody else in the WWF. Dale, let's talk Diesel.
I'm not a great fan.
The title change. What do you think of the MSG change? Doing it so quickly, what do you think of the switch?
It's kind of strange. I mean, looking back at what Bob Backlund's brought to TV, I mean, that's been building up now since, God, probably about the end of September, I think they were building that up from. It's a good kind of a month or two anyway that they've built him up with Bret. And then you've got to think, as you said earlier on, they've had this plan here for Diesel. It's a bit of a strange time. I mean, we were all talking over, 72 hours this all happened between having Bret the champion just before and Thanksgiving, and then Backlund, and then Diesel on the Saturday night in New York. First things first, I think I was really disappointed for Bret. He never really got that chance to kind of main event with the title. He was a really fighting champion, really over with the crowd. He's clearly the best wrestler in the company by a long way, and it kind of looks like the true flag bearer for this new generation. We've then got Bob Backlund coming in, over 40, hasn't had the title for 11 years, and he goes over half an hour with your champion. So it kind of builds up Backlund. But then having him lose 3 days later to Diesel, I mean, it's a really strange time, to be honest with you, I think.
Chris?
Yeah, I was really looking forward to a Bob Backlund run. Whether he should have got the title in the first place, I'm a bit torn with, because I mean, he's 45 years old. Is that right? Is he 45?
About that.
Yeah, and they're pushing this new generation. So it is an odd decision to have had him to be champion in the first place. But I just think he is so entertaining, promo-wise. I think we didn't discuss he had a promo after he won the title at Survivor Series, and I thought it was a fantastic promo. And yeah, he was, again, entertaining on commentary. And I was just really looking forward to that. So to have it, not even have one Raw with him as champion is, for me, it's disappointing. And it's just strange the way that they did it at the house show. And then the 10-second match.
10 seconds.
Yeah, it's just very, very weird. I think the way they did it, I think it was quite well, with the highlight package and the promo with Diesel. I think they did it quite well, but as to why they did it that way, I've no idea. I don't get it at all.
No, I mean, to come to, well, I suppose each guy in turn, I mean, The Brett thing, as you say, it's, you know, I mean, Brett's main evented, well, Rumble, I suppose, two pay-per-views this year out of the five. The first one was the Rumble. Inadvertently main evented the second one in the sense that that was the WrestleMania card, where the main event wasn't announced. It was the winner, Brett was going to be in the main event. We knew that. It was just who he was going to face, and it was, you know, whether it was going to be Luger or Yokozuna. And then we get to King of the Ring, and we get Brett versus Diesel. Very good match, actually, all told. But that was in the middle of the show. And then we get to SummerSlam, Brett against Owen in a steel cage, middle of the show. And then we get Brett against Backlund tonight, middle of the show. It's an odd set of positioning in the sense that it's not like any of those shows had killer main events. I can justify a title match not being in the final match if you've got a gargantuan main event. But nobody's going to sit here and tell me that Jerry Lawler, Roddy Piper, Undertaker, or Undertaker, Yokozuna were better matches in terms of build, in terms of importance than any match Brett has been in since he won the title at WrestleMania. While I like Brett as champion, I think he's the kind of guy that you know what you're going to get with Brett, but equally you know what you won't get. You won't get a guy who I don't think is going to be able to talk his way into a great program that's going to set the world alight. You're going to get very, very good matches as we have throughout, and they've not helped him with these stipulations at any point. But equally I kind of feel like I don't feel like there's a level up in terms of a Brett title run, in terms of you know what you're going to get, but equally there's a ceiling to all that, and I feel that I can see that ceiling, and I don't imagine that's a great, unless they start really focus on putting him with great workers, you know, like Owen, like, you know, the 1-2-3 kid, like Shawn Michaels, unless they really focus on something like that, I know what I'm going to get with a Bret Hart title win. A title reign, and it's good, but for me it's not great. As for Backlund, I'll say this: when we first got wind of Backlund being in the main event, I thought, what the hell are they doing here? Of all the names, and we discussed this on the show a few months back, of all the guys, I don't understand it. And when I first saw Backlund, I thought, I don't understand it, but I'll give them a ton of credit, and I'll give Backlund a ton of credit. They've done a phenomenal job with Bob Backlund since August. They really have. He looks like a star. They did a tremendous job with the cross-faced chicken wing, or the cross-chicken face, or whatever Diesel called it.
Well, they've built that up that much, Bob. As you see, 79% of people say that it was more effective. So it's
that was a hotline poll.
Yeah.
And these are polls. They don't really matter. But these are polls that are designed for people to set for the vote for the face move. And 79% of people picked up their phone, charged at, I don't know, 99 cents a minute, and voted for the cross-faced chicken wing as the main thing. I think that says just about more than I can about just how well they've done with this. And he's been involved in some great action. Should he have won the title? I honestly don't know. But when it happened, I thought, okay, I'm a lot less shocked by this, and a lot less, because when they first said Backlund's going to win the title, I thought, what? But when I watched it, I thought, this kind of works. And I thought the action in the match against Brett and the cross-faced chicken wing was tremendous.
But the way clearly, I'm looking at it, Bob, see when you think about the pay-per-view model, you're talking 2-3 months, you're going to have a pay-per-view. In between that, you've got weekly Raws. Over the last 2 months, Bob Backlund has been TV gold. So imagining him with a title every week, the amount of heat that he could get for that crowd, I was intrigued.
No, I'd agree in terms of that there was certainly a lot of potential for a Bob Backlund title reign going into 95, and we can discuss that in a minute. But moving on to Diesel, who, you know, I talk about a ceiling with Brett. In many ways, given Diesel's limited in-ring ability, I can almost imagine a much lower ceiling with Diesel. And he's a guy that, unlike Brett, you're going to have to be very selective with what you throw at him. But they've done a tremendous job with Diesel this year. Not necessarily on TV or even on pay-per-view, in the sense that it's kind of been up and down, that we had the big moment at the Rumble, then he kind of just fell away for a bit, and at WrestleMania he was just the bit part, got ejected after 3 or 4 minutes in the Razor Shawn ladder match. King of the Ring, a really good match with Brett, and that says a lot for Brett, because Diesel's not capable of carrying a match like that on his own. A really good match. And then we get to SummerSlam, and he's the losing half of a match against Razor for the Intercontinental title. But one thing that under all of this is that at the house show reports, he is one of the most popular guys. Acting as a heel, he is one of the most popular guys they've got at live events. And as I said with Bundy, and as I said on Volume 3 with WCW, is that they've got something here and they've gone with it. And, well, as we'll discuss, Chris, what do you think of Diesel going with him?
Just too soon, I think. And I think by having him win the title at a house show, it takes away his, you know, a moment. I don't see why they couldn't at least have it on a Raw or the Rumble. And I think a program with Backlund would have been really interesting as well. I think it would have been quite entertaining. So my issue isn't in, I mean, I still think it's too early. I think he's, I don't know. I think in ring wise, he's got a lot to prove still. But it's just the way they did it I have an issue with. I just don't see why it couldn't have been done on a Raw, at least, opposed to a house show.
Yeah, as I said at the start, Bob, I'm not a great fan of Diesel. Going back to the King of the Ring, as I said at the time, it was a match I watched twice, and I think he was carrying a niggle and injury at that point. And his selling, I thought, was pretty decent. His offense was a bit restricted. There's not a lot to a Diesel match, but you certainly can't deny he's got a look. He's a tall guy. You must be talking a good 6'6", 6'7".
He's 6'10".
6'10", is he billed at?
Billed a 7 foot, but he's... I think they said when he played basketball, he was 6'9", 6'10". They might be billing him 7 foot, but yeah.
Well, I've gave the big man a couple of inches off. That's a fair play. 6'10". He carries it well. He looks good. He's got the kind of good looks that you'd expect for a champion to have on TV. The look's certainly his strongest factors for me. The in-ring stuff is pretty limited, but as we've seen in June when you put him in with a Bret Hart, he is capable of pulling it off. Charisma is a bit of a doubt for me. He's kind of got that kind of cheeky charm about him, but he just doesn't seem kind of similar to Bret. He just doesn't seem as if he would be able to talk you into a ring, talk you into an arena, should I say. The only other kind of worrying thing for me, as you alluded to yourself, is it's another one of these kind of stop-start pushes that he's had through 94. Brilliant at the Rumble. As you say, disappeared apart from a couple of minutes in sunglasses at the WrestleMania. King of the Ring, he's going for the Intercontinental and loses SummerSlam.
King of the Ring, he went for the WWF title.
Brett at King of the Ring and then the Intercontinental at SummerSlam. And then he looked like a star coming out of the Survivor Series, and 3 days later he's got the belt. It's just kind of, are they really confident with him without giving him that match at WrestleMania? Is it somebody they've actually got faith in? I mean, they've put the belt on him, so they must have, but is it going to be something that we maybe see their doubts creep him in again this reign?
I like it in that we're into the unknown. And as I say, one of the things with Brett is that I know, even though it was his first kind of major title run, I know what I'm getting with Bret Hart. And I know what I'm not getting. With Diesel, I'm not getting great in-ring action, but, you know, that it looks like, because Diesel, and we'll listen to his promo in a minute, because we're going to talk about a bit more of that after the promo. It looks like that it's going to be Diesel and Brett at the Rumble. Brett's got some time off, so they're going to do Diesel and Backlund on the house show loops. But it looks like they're going to do Diesel and Brett in January. If you put Diesel with the right guys, if they focus, because the good thing is, really, is that they've got a ready-made match with Brett, they've got a ready-made match with Backlund, and they've got a ready-made match with Shawn. I think if the plan is just to have the Backlund thing as the house show run, as the drawing card for that, then we've got Brett at the Rumble, and then maybe Shawn at Mania?
Shawn at Mania, maybe.
How long's Shawn out for? Do we know?
I don't think it was that long. I mean, I know they took him off all live events while the wrist injury was in play. And also he didn't do a lot in this match, but it's an arm injury. I think it might have been a break, but I don't think it's a significant injury. I suspect he might be, in action the next month or so. Cause it was tricky because he broke it, I think, at a live event, but they had a load of TV already taped. So they couldn't really reference it because it wouldn't have made sense. And then, you know, all right, if you say 2 weeks before he's broken his arm, how does he then justify being in the match? So they couldn't really reference it, but I don't get the sense it's that serious.
See, because for me, the logical next step is Diesel, Sean at the Rumble. But it also makes sense to stretch that out and maybe have, Sean as the winner, the Rumble winner.
Yeah, and Brett said on the phone in the Owen match,
start of the year.
Diesel said, Brett, it's your match when you want it. Now, okay, Brett promised Yokozuna a title match after WrestleMania, and that never happened. So let's not sit on the idea that babyfaces are great at keeping their promises. But I would say those are the first two logical feuds, and then you've got also, Owen as an opportunity.
And you've got Backlund who's due a rematch as well, so where does that fit in?
Well, you can do
it. It seems they've got options, but just not enough pay-per-views to fill these rematches.
Well, you can do it on TV, or as I say, they may just end up just making it their house show main event over Christmas or on Raw.
Either make it the house show run, or maybe even that's why they've done it at the house show in New York. Maybe
to put more emphasis
off TV
on the house
with
shows.
The idea of having it in December on Raw.
It's a great selling point. Here's footage of Diesel winning the title against Bob Backlund at a house show.
Sells tickets, doesn't it, for the future? If you're going to think that.
Cover match, with the idea that, well, if they can do it there, maybe they can do it back. Del, in terms of the house show win itself, we saw, the entirety of the match on Raw, and it lasted 10 seconds. I really liked it. I didn't like the whole, I don't think you should be jumping through loops of baby faces. I don't think it should, because it didn't need to be a no submission match. You didn't need to sell it like that. I mean, I suppose the idea was, we'll call it no submission with the idea that everyone's going to expect a title change. Fair enough, but I don't think you should be doing that kind of thing because babyface doesn't need it. I thought 10 seconds, really effective.
As we've said, Bob, we've got doubts over the level that Diesel can go to physically in a ring with the technical side of it. Builds him up. I mean, we've seen it at the Survivor Series. He came in, 3 jackknives, 3 pins, eliminated 3 of his opponents in 90 seconds, made him look like a boss. We've got him at Madison Square Garden. He's in front of a man that's previously had title reigns for 5 years. Just seen him go the best part of 35, 40 minutes with the champion. Beats him in 10 seconds, builds up the jackknife. Again, makes him look like a boss. It's something we've seen a lot, me and you in ECW this year, where they kind of build guys up and kind of try and deflect for what maybe their strengths aren't. You'll maybe see guys that aren't great talkers, they won't get a mic. Guys that aren't great technical wrestlers, you'll see them with a mic a lot of the time, are doing promos. If they can protect Diesel, especially at this early stage, they could have something with them. And I thought the 10-second squash was a brilliant way to highlight that.
Let's segue into the Diesel promo that aired on Raw. I say the Diesel promo, I've had to cut this up a bit because it's about 8 minutes long. So you're going to hear about a 2-minute cut. There are some jumps in the middle, but we're going to discuss this promo after we've heard it.
And when I started to run out of gas, or should I say diesel, Sean decided it was time to stay in a little bit longer. I jackknife Razor Ramon. Now Shawn Michaels wants the tag. And we all know how much Sean loves the spotlight, don't we? I got a message to you, Shawn Michaels, wherever you may be. That is, in Survivor Series, you might have got away. And I tell you, if I would have got my hands on you that night, you wouldn't have survived. Hey, Bob, now besides those bow ties, which I gotta say are quite stellar, hey, you're a real wrestler, you're a real man, I respect you. If you get the crosswing chicken on me, hey, it might be trouble for Big D. But you know what, Bob? You gotta get it on me. You gotta get it on me. I don't know Brett that well. I did combat with Brett in June at King of the Ring. It was 30 minutes of hell. The man is a great competitor. He was a true champion. I don't like the way Bret Hart's belt was taken from him. Because I think, I know, and everybody out there knows, that if they were waiting on Bret Hart to give up on his own, Survivor Series would be going on right now.
I have to agree with you there.
Now, I've been a champion for a few hours, a couple of days. It's all new to me. But if there's one thing I can do, one thing I can emulate from Bret the Hitman Hart, is I want to become, as he was, a fighting champion. Bret never!
Yes, the fightingest champion of all time.
Bret never turned down a challenge. I'm not real proud of the way I got mine, but he didn't turn it down when the time came. And Bret, enjoy that great family you have right now. Enjoy your time off. I'm sorry about the injury, but I'll tell you, as a man with my word and my hand out in front of you, anytime, anywhere, Bret Hart, you want a shot at this belt, brother, you got it. That's a promise from Big D.
Chris, everything that Del said before we listened to that was about, you know, strengths and weaknesses and that. I don't really know what part of an 8-minute Diesel promo fits that description, Chris.
It left him totally, it opened up all his weaknesses for me. I didn't like it at all. It felt like they were trying to flesh out a character for him, but I just, especially the bit with Bret, I felt it was just cheesiness. It was over the top. I really didn't like it. I thought this was just kept it short and sweet. Vince McMahon asking a couple of questions, just not sort of showing off his weaknesses, showing his weaknesses, and just didn't work at all for me.
Del?
It was really strange, Bob. I mean, they tried their best. I mean, the two options you've basically got here is you can either pre-tape it with Diesel. We know it's not his biggest strength and we can highlight what he's good at in a pre-taped segment, but having him in the arena gives him the spotlight and it makes him look like a big deal. They tried their best. I mean, Vince, it was really structured, almost mollycoddled questions. And I mean, they did try and set him up right. I mean, even from the start, the kind of stuttering right at the start of the interview with Vince, and it was absolutely, thank you. And it was kind of like a stutter. It was nearly like Jimmy Two Times at a Goodfellas a couple of years ago, but it was, this man just isn't comfortable in this position. I mean, there was clearly fed lines into the promo, whether it was that had maybe put him off. We're talking about running out of Diesel and Sean loves the spotlight, whether it's because they've tried to feed him those lines that's put him off his stride. There was the infamous bit with the cross-winged chicken. And I mean, he is getting a reaction, but the kind of issue that we had with Bret's reign is he was a brilliant wrestler, but he couldn't talk. Diesel isn't really the best at either, and especially as we've just heard in the promo, even right at the end, he's got his big finale talking about the new generation, stutters his way through it. It's really not a promising start.
It kind of felt like they wrote the promo for somebody else.
Mm.
I mean, not that, because that's the thing, as much as they've kind of pushed Diesel a lot, he's just kind of been a foil for Sean. And he's got over really well being a foil for Sean, but it's not like the Diesel character on its own has kind of been, you know, fleshed out in that kind of way. But you got the preconception that, okay, this is a cool guy, you know, he's a guy that doesn't take any shit and all that. And then we get this promo, and it's like he was cutting a Hulk Hogan promo, not in the style of Hulk Hogan, but it was all kind of respectful and, you know, oh yeah, I'll give you your title match when you like, Bret. I respect you. The bit with Backlund saying, you know, well, I think I can beat you, but I don't know if I can get out the crossface chicken wing, which, okay, fair enough. They're trying to build up the crossface chicken wing or keep it strong. The concern is that if they try and treat this like any other title run, he could nosedive, in the sense that if they try and put him in 15, 20 minute main events against the wrong guys, it's not going to work. Not yet. If they try and put him in big talking promos and talking feuds with guys, it's not going to work. And There is a way of making this work. It's tricky because it's not now the heel breaking out against Shawn. It's now the babyface. But this wasn't it. This really wasn't it. And if this is the sign of things to come, then I'm concerned. And I'd almost say if this is a sign of things to come, he might lose the title by January. Unless they see some numbers that suggest it's working. Because if this is the plan for the next 2 months, he's not going to be popular come January. I don't think he's not going to be hot. And it's a shame because he left Survivor Series as the star because it was, let's put him in a very kind of incubated situation where we can really accentuate what he's good at and really just pinpoint a few things. But a 7-minute promo just wasn't it.
Well, he said it himself even during the promo, Bob. He wants to be like Brett. He wants to be a fighting champion. It suggests a lot of TV time. And I mean,
why does he want to be like Brett?
Sorry, this is what why does he want to be like Brett? He's not the fighting champion type. He should be the monster type who takes on all and squashes everyone.
Well, that's that. I mean, we've just seen a 7-minute promo there. Diesel should be having 7-minute matches. Yeah. And then a couple of words, make it look cool, make him look strong, on to the next one. That's all they need to do with him. Protect him to the skies and let's see how the numbers go in the back of it.
And it is just one promo, and maybe they just wanted to get some sound bites that they can use in the future. Maybe they'll work this out. It wasn't a good start. Anyway, let's move on. Got to talk about Randy Savage. Let's start by listening to Vince McMahon on the first edition of Raw in the month.
All right, we're back, ladies and gentlemen. We'll have more action for you momentarily. At this time, obviously conspicuous by his absence is the Macho Man Randy Savage, and I'd like to announced, unfortunately, that Randy Savage has been unable to sign a contract with the World Wrestling Federation, not unable to rather come to terms with the World Wrestling Federation for a new contract. But, Randy, I know you're out there listening. And on behalf of all of us here in the World Wrestling Federation, all of your fans, and certainly me, the number one fan, I'd like to say thank you for all of your positive contributions to the World Wrestling Federation. Thank you, Randy Savage, for all of the wonderful memories for so many years here in the World Wrestling Federation. We wish you nothing but the best. Godspeed and good luck.
Chris, this is huge. This really is.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I'm disappointed. I still, even though they're pushing this new generation, young stars, I still felt Savage had a massive part to play. I didn't like him on commentary. I still thought he had a part to play in the ring. And it's just, it's unexpected. It really is. I don't know. I feel that there's still a couple of guys he could have worked with. He could have put over. You've got Shawn Michaels who I felt he could have worked with, even Diesel. And I just, it's unexpected, totally unexpected.
Especially
considering how he said about the line about him not taking, is it $40 million to work elsewhere? It's just, I felt he was a WWF man for life, and yeah, it's unexpected. More to it.
Let me fill in just kind of the story, really, and we covered a fair amount of it in the news, but essentially, to say that a lot of guys backstage in WWF were shocked would be an understatement, in that nobody saw this coming. As we said, Savage was on the cover of the WWF magazine in November. He was just part of the furniture, you know what I mean? It's not like they were going anywhere with him. He was just the commentator who, hadn't really wrestled or been in any action since WrestleMania when he faced Crush. But apparently, he'd been in negotiations with Eric Bischoff, of WCW. And once Vince got word of this, they just parted ways. And that's it. And we're not going to discuss the WCW part of this here. We do that in volume 3. But Dale, this isn't a massive departure in the sense that Savage wasn't the number one face. He wasn't the WWF champion. He wasn't a guy who was regularly wrestling in the ring. He wasn't a guy who was, part of any major plans going forward. But as a moment, as a signifier in terms of a significant moment, like Randy Savage is as much to WWF in the 80s as Hogan was, and now he's gone.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, Bob. Totally agree with Chris as well. I mean, it's just when you're seeing, as you say, you'll come onto the WCW bit when you guys do the Clash later on. When you're in a kind of battle, as these two companies are at the minute, they're the two biggest promotions. WCW's got Hogan, is Savage in 1994 as big as Hogan was when he came in? No, you're right. But with Hogan down south now, Savage is as big a name as they've got in New York. I mean, they're really lacking that star power for Hogan went. Savage can still go, even just ridiculously stupid things like you catch the TV at the corner of your eye and Raw's on, you're going to see Randy Savage. He's going to be there in neon colours, he's going to be there in checkers, he's going to be there with the hat and the sunglasses and that voice, if it catches your ear, you're going to stop and see what's going on. And I mean, you can tell even with that Vince promo that we just heard, there still is clearly a relationship there. I mean, if you look at other notable departures in the last couple of years, the likes of like a Nails or an Ultimate Warrior, you don't really get that side of Vince showing through with somebody that's no longer there. And I mean, he clearly knew that the negotiations with WCW are ongoing, but as you say, it's just a really shocked departure. I mean, there's the likes of Slim Jim sponsorships that might be lost at this, probably will be. They're calling in the likes of Bob Backlund. We've seen Piper in June. You've got Ted DiBiase with King Kong Bundy and Ivan Koloff. Jerry Lawler still getting in the ring. Savage is as good, if not better than all, or if kind of most or all of these guys. I mean,
This is exactly why I'm surprised they aren't using more in-ring, especially with the recent comebacks of Backlund and Bundy.
With other guys that's in there. Savage could clearly go as well as those guys. And as I say, the name and the star power that's lost with us, this is going to potentially be a huge, huge deal for WCW and a huge loss for the WWF, Bob.
Yeah, I mean, if they jumped in 2 feet with the new generation thing, you could explain it. If they had a number of really hot wrestlers, you could explain it. Not in terms of him departing, because they didn't get him out the door, he left, but in terms of them just kind of defocusing him into the announcing role. But they don't have a big run of over baby faces. And we had Jerry Lawler and Roddy Piper at King of the Ring, and we've had Backlund, a WWF champion, this month. You can better explain Savage's absence from the ring if you can point to both of those things being false, and they're not. And that's what I don't get. Chris, is this? I mean, we do cover this, I did want to split it up just to keep the kind of relevant Savage discussion to the relevant volume of the show. But is this just another kind of flow in the whole WCW is the place to be, WWF is the guy where the big names leave?
Possibly. Like I said, money-wise, I mean, Savage must have been offered a great deal. I think
$400,000 a year, I think, was the contract
there
offer.
There you go. I think part of it is, I mean, it's obvious from I think WrestleMania 9, was it? When he first did commentary. I think it's obvious Vince wants him to have more of a backstage role, as opposed to being an in-ring guy. And I think Savage might want to carry on in-ring. I think that might have a part of it, but it's just like, say, it's another big name leaving to go to WCW.
Understandable as well, Chris, when you say you want
Savage. Of course it is. And that's why I think...
The guys that's been coming in, your Backlunds, your Pipers, your Bundys.
And when you've seen all these guys coming back,
Go on, Dale. Yeah.
Sorry, Bob, even, as I say, looking at WCW, as we covered last month, the three faces of fear being in main event spots. And I mean, Savage could easily slot into that, whether it's the story you want to tell that Savage and Hogan used to work together, now they've got another chance from WCW's point of view, or even going back to WWF, looking at the guys that have been slotted into more or less main event and or title spots, Savage must just feel like what's going on when he sat at that desk. And as Chris says, there are a lot of people, himself included, that kind of maybe aren't great fans of Randy on commentary, but he's certainly got a memorable voice. As I say, if you hear him, you're going to listen. If you see him, you're going to watch. And having that kind of level of guy that can do, whether it's kind of imparting his knowledge onto these new generation guys, bringing them on, even just being a solid promo, he's certainly unique, and losing that I think it's a great loss to him. And if rumours are to be believed, then certainly a great gain for WCW.
Yeah, certainly. Anyway, we will move on from that. And I want to talk about Owen Hart. Specifically, the bit in the Survivor Series match between Bret and Backlund. Del, Bret Hart was in the Crossface Chicken Wing for 9 minutes.
Yeah.
Owen Hart supposedly was being a heel because Bulldog runs into the ring steps. He gets laid out. That's it. He might still be there. I don't know. and he's just laid out on the floor. And Owen Hart's there at ringside. And all right, he puts on the tears and he's being all melodramatic and, you know, it's obviously all fake and all that. But I don't understand what is such a heel thing, even if it was a heel thing, about saying this match should end, because Del Brett was done for.
This has really got your goat, Bob, innit?
Yeah, really annoyed.
I mean, I don't know whether I'm your best man to have a discussion about this, because, as you know yourself, I'm a big, big, big Owen Hart fan. I thought his acting in it was great. I thought the emotion he showed was good.
I don't think it was poorly. I don't think it was kind of bad acting. I just thought it was bad storytelling from the people who put it together.
Well, for me, the logic that I'm, whether it's just me that's kind of overlooked this or maybe overanalyzed it, I think it does make sense where Owen doesn't like Brett. Brett is the champion. Owen wants Brett to lose that belt. Where I think the logic hole comes in, especially for your point of view, is he'd been in that hold. He was on his back. He'd been in the chicken wing. It's been built up and built up on TV. The crowd are obviously with it as being a devastating move. Brett, on paper, should have been losing. I think that's where the big hole comes in logically. For me, I think Owen, the way that the story had went on, with it being kind of 5-6 minutes before he even starts getting over into Stu and Helen's ear, I think from a storyline point of view, it shows that Owen has watched this. It shows that Owen has seen Brett in the move and he still hadn't gave up. Bulldog's obviously down, so there's no one there to throw the towel in. And I think Owen then at that point thinks he's just going to hold on and hold on here. Yeah, it might be that Brett gets knocked out. Is the ref going to call for the bell? Does that mean Mr. Backlund's going to win? I need to do something here. And at that point, then he's went to get Stu and Helen and play off their emotions, Helen in particularly, and kind of play up that he's concerned for Brett and he's worried and tries to get them to do it because that's the only way to end the match. Personally, I thought it worked. But as I say, whether I'm overanalyzing it, I don't know what you think, Chris.
I agree with both of you. I think that there is a big hole in that, a logic hole in that he's, you know, as a heel move, it doesn't make sense. It'd have worked for me if it had been again 4 minutes long and Brett was maybe still clinging on a little bit. And there might have been a slight chance. I mean, at 9 minutes, it's, let's say you're expecting him to lose, but if it had been a bit shorter and there was maybe signs of him maybe not giving up, then that's where it works. I agree with both of you on that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it was, as I said, I thought Owen did his role really well. I just think it didn't make sense. And the story come out of it is that, as Diesel said in his promo, that had Owen not convinced his mother to throw in the towel, then, you know, Brett wouldn't have quit. But it's like, well, what would have happened? Brett was done. and it's like, you know, you almost want to look at like Owen almost saved Brett's career. And if we look at this from a kayfabe perspective, if Brett had been in that hole for much longer, like would it have ended his career, given that, you know, the crossface chicken wing is the move that nobody can get out of and it's incredibly painful and it does a lot of damage? That was my problem. I thought the story was very good, but I think, Chris, you were probably right. Had it been shorter and had they have had more of an out for Brett, I think it would have been fine. But I came out of this thinking, you know, well done, Owen. You just saved your brother's life. And I don't think that was how I was supposed to come out of it. But anyway, that will end this month's show. Del Muir, thank you very much for joining me for both this part and for volume two.
Thanks again, Bob. We'll be back after this, so.
Yeah. Del, you're on Twitter?
I am, mate. Del, DEL_Muir, MUIR.
And Chris Bradish?
Yep, it's at Chris Bradish. Simple as that.
That's Bradish.
ISH, yeah.
Yeah, and that will conclude Volume 1. As I say, you're going through this in order. You've got a lot to look forward to. Volume 2 is the ECW review, your standard ECW stuff. We're just reviewing the TV for a month, but a lot happens. Del and Chris Lacey at the end of Volume 2 will review the AAA When Worlds Collide Lucha Libre pay-per-view. And in Volume 3...
some idiot talking Spanish as well, Bob.
Yeah, that as well. And in Volume 3, myself, Chris White and Kieran Mitchell will run down all of the WCW action, including the Clash of Champions, the imminent arrival of Randy Savage, and we also discuss some rumours of both Yokozuna and the Ultimate Warrior potentially going to WCW as well. So you've got all that to look forward to. You've got a ton of audio this month, you know, take it in, we're recording this last, so I should probably sign off by saying, you know, we'll see you in December, but probably not. So anyway, we'll see you in Volume 2. You can find me on Twitter at Bobby Bamba, the podcast and the account on Twitter at Wrestling20YRS, on Facebook.com/Wrestling20YRS, our website, wrestling20YRS.com. We've got a ton of blogs on there. I review the rise of Diesel so far in one of the blogs as well. And there's a few other things there too. All of that, if you're on iTunes, subscribe to us there, leave us a rating and a review. RSF links on the site if you use anything else for iTunes to follow the show. And until next time, which for many of you might be about 30 seconds time for part two, I've been Bob Bambert. This has been Volume 1 of the November 1994 edition of the Wrestling 20 Years Ago podcast. Goodbye.